Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, subscribe and download your favorite scary story and listen to me wherever you may dwell on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. A shout out to my patrons and my channel members. You guys rock and have earned yourself a place in the Dark Forest. Now let's get spooky. I am currently holed up in my closet hiding from something. I don't know if I could get this out there before my phone dies, because I haven't had power since yesterday. I'll try to be quick and explain why. 10 years ago, my grandparents lived here. Since I was his only relative, I was his sole inheritor. It's a small farm in rural Wisconsin. The closest person was down the road about a mile. My grandpa was friends with him. I forgot his name. But I do remember that it was something like John or Justin or something like that. Well, anyways, he seemed nice enough, very honest. So it was a surprise when he turned up dead, torn into pieces. Nothing was stolen. Nothing was broken. He was just dead. Well, that happened about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And since then, weird stuff has begun happening to me. It started simple enough with an odd feeling of being watched. Then movement in a small patch of trees in the distance across the road. But during the last week is when I knew something was trying to kill me. Monday. Monday was normal. I had gotten used to the feeling of being watched by now. So it was a normal day. Until right before bed. Now I'm a night owl, so I usually stay up late. Tonight though, I took Chewy, my big-ass German Shepherd, out to use the bathroom. He just started barking at the trees across the street. Now these were at least 100 feet into a field, and almost impossible for someone to see anything. So I guessed he just smelt something. After about a minute of barking, he stopped and ran to the door, refusing to move. Now, kind of freaked out, I let him in. This was odd, because he had never done this before, and he's 5. He made a beeline for his kennel, which he only does during the 4th of July or thunderstorms, so something had to be off. I made sure that every door was locked before heading to bed. Tuesday was horrible. My door was cracked open, and what I found on the porch scared me. Chewy was ripped to shreds. Every limb was placed below his body. Chewy's head was placed a few inches from his neck. There was a trail of blood leading across the streets, aiming right at those trees. Whatever killed him was too smart to be a bear or any other wild animal. So I grabbed my 12-gauge and a flashlight and headed into the trees. It felt much larger inside the woods than outside. I knew I made a bad choice when I found Chewy's tail on the ground. I don't know how I missed that. I turned around and ran. Honestly, I'm surprised that I made it home in one piece. But I never felt safe since, knowing that it somehow opened the door. The rest of the day was spent being paranoid. Wednesday. I decided that what had happened the past few days was just a number of freak accidents, and I was going insane from spending so much time alone. So I decided to call some friends to my house, but they never made it. They said it was because they had a flat tire, and only a few miles from my excluded house, they were attacked by it. I just know. The rest of the day, I had somehow heightened sense of being watched, but only when I passed by windows, which all had blinds. So I obviously closed them. Thursday. I ripped my blinds down while I was sleeping, so now I don't feel safe anywhere in the house except in rooms without any windows. Closet. I decided that enough was enough and grabbed a lighter and a bottle of beer. I made my way to the forest and set it ablaze before throwing the beer on it, making the fire explode. I waited for the entire forest to be on fire before calling the fire department. That night was one of the scariest in my life. It started at around 9:30 with screaming, almost human-like but not quite. Louder than anything I've ever heard, so loud it sounded like it was right in front of me, even though I knew it was across the street. After about a half an hour of nothing happening, I decided to head to bed. I was awoken by who knows how long after some banging downstairs. I grabbed my shotgun and aimed my flashlight at the door. I knelt behind my bed as the ruckus downstairs never stopped, and neither did my tightening grip. I was too scared to even sweat. I don't know how long I waited before falling asleep in that position. Friday. Today is when shit hit the fan. When I woke up, my flashlight was burnt out and my phone was at 70%. Reception was just gone and I was sore and tired. But I quickly woke up when I saw the state my house was in. Windows were smashed and cabinet doors were barely hanging on. Food was scattered across the floor and the faucet to my sink was ripped off. My front door was broken in half, half inside and half outside, laying on the ground. My lights were also smashed out. My couch was ripped to shreds as if a bear had gotten into it. I knew it couldn't stay there, so I grabbed my car keys and wallet and headed to my car. But the tires were slashed. I don't know when this happened. It could have been Monday for all I knew. I just had a horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach the entire day, like it was inside of me. But I did once catch a glimpse of something outside my house, but just in my peripheral vision, so this might not be too accurate. It looked tall and skinny. I think it had grayish skin, but don't quote me. When I looked back, it was gone. I don't dare try to run to town because the thing would easily get me. I tried to live normally and ignore that horrible feeling, but it just got to me. At around 1 p.m., I got so bad that I knew it was inside the house with me, so I casually grabbed enough supplies to last me the night and barricaded myself inside my closet, where I currently am. It's around 10 p.m. now, and I'm thinking about making a break for the town, or else I'll die like my neighbor. I'll post an update if I make it out alive. We had all assembled around the campfire, ready to die from exhaustion of leisure, when I decided that we should tell some scary stories. "Are you sure?" said Remy, an English major. Everyone rumbled to show their approval. You see, Remy and I were friends. I was sort of an introverted person, and we both went to the same college. She came to me some days before asking me if I'd like to come over to party in the forest with her and her friends, most of whom I was already acquainted with. She insisted that I join them, since I haven't been out a lot lately. Knowing me, I hesitantly agreed. They started packing campfire supplies during the day, and as expected from college kids, included lots and lots of booze. By dusk, we left for the trail to the forest, which wasn't too distant from the campus. Among our group, six of us to be exact, three males including myself and three females, of misfits, was a girl who everyone found to be flawless. Her name was Becky. Becky always stuck out like a sore thumb. She was always that girl you'd see laughing. She had long blonde hair, piercing blue eyes with a huge smile. She was always happy and extremely charming. Nobody's that happy in college, but Becky was. After about a mile of walking, we set foot onto the campsite. It was pitch black until the campfire was lit. After the raging party started to fizzle out, upon which I asked to tell some scary stories. "I'll go first," urged Becky. "Does anyone know the story of the co-ed killer?" you would have thought that a bunch of college kids would have at least known the history of Ed Kemper. Everyone shrugged, not having any clue. I knew because I watched lots of crime documentaries, but I wanted to see what she had to say about it. Okay, let me tell you. Back in the day, there was this boy named Edmund Kemper. Ed for short. He was a very peculiar boy. Some say he was very handsome. By the age of 15, Ed lived with his grandparents. He hated them so much, especially his grandmother. One day, he took his grandfather's hunting rifle and stormed into the kitchen, looking at his grandmother and bang! He shot her in the head, blood everywhere. Becky's eyes raised with a crazy look along with that constant terrifying smile. She continued. He then put two shots into her back. He then went looking for his grandfather, who he killed afterward. She went on to tell us how he killed his mother and best friend, and how he decapitated them, and how he murdered 6 co-ed students. The startling part was how she gave the details to each killing without any change of emotion. She still had that damn smile on her face. I couldn't even remember these details, and I've watched so many criminal documentaries, I could be a certified detective. Terrified as hell, like someone else, I insisted we call it a night. Everyone quickly agreed. There were 4 tents. Remy shared her tent with the other girl. Becky shared hers with Chad. He always had a thing for her. And I and the other guy shared separate tents. After some time, everyone fell asleep, I think. The camp was quiet and ominous. And suddenly, there it was. A loud shout for help. The shout could have destroyed anyone's eardrums. We quickly ran out to see who was in trouble. When all 3 of us checked the girls' tents, Remy and the other girl were missing. Chad also said Becky was not there in her tent either. We started the search everywhere for them. We then found the girl who Remy shared the tent with. She was dead. Her eyes were wide open. My eyes traveled from her bloody face and stopped at her throat, which had an unending open. I saw everything. The slit was not accurate. It was butchered. The only thing that came to mind next was to find Remy.
"Over here, it's Remy! She needs help!" Chad hollered.
I rushed over there. And there she was, lying almost lifeless. I felt her. I held her in my hands. The gash on her throat was evident. She whispered something while she gurgled on her blood, and the air subtly left her lungs.
"It's Becky. She did this."
She died in my arms. Chad called the cops. The guys searched for Becky until the cops got there, but there was no signs. After that night, I was torn up. The way those innocent lives were taken by someone they trusted, and I lost a dear friend. A few weeks had passed, and the cops investigated it, were later to reveal that Becky's actual name was Heather Simmons. But she was adopted, and her actual name was Heather Kemper. Turns out that Eddie Kemper allegedly had a child with a woman before he was sent to jail. And she was that child. She's continuing her father's legacy by murdering coeds. I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. From that day on, I decided I'll never camp again. There was a rich family of 4 visiting their vacation home in Phillipsburg, Montana. There was a man, his wife, and their 2 kids. Their house was located at the bottom of the mountain right next to the trailhead. When they arrived there, they were all very tired and just wanted to sleep after their 4-hour flight from San Antonio, Texas. It was the middle of September when they came up. They loved all the colors of fall. The father, Daniel, who was 38, forgot to start their boiler outside of the house, so it was already extremely cold as they tried to sleep. None of them caught too much sleep that night, but they got up in the morning and got the boiler started and they got warmed up. As they were drinking their morning coffee, getting warm, snowflakes started to flow down from the sky. They had never seen very much snow before, given that they were from Texas. After only an hour, there was about 20 inches of snow and the kids were out playing in it. By noon, there was 40 inches, and they were starting to realize they may be stuck there for a while. The BMW car that they drove there was completely buried by nightfall. There was 7 feet of snow by the time it quit snowing. That night, Daniel didn't get any sleep. He kept thinking he heard knocking at the front door. Once he finally fell asleep, the knocking woke him up again. He got up to investigate. He walked down to the stairs and to the front door, opened the door, and there was nothing there. Just a disgusting amount of snow. After he went back to his bed, he fell asleep just fine, chalked it up to his paranoia. The next morning after their morning coffee, the kids, Bethany, 12, and Austin, 10, wanted to go walk up the trail. They all got their snow gear on and started their trek up the mountain. After about 3 hours of walking, they found a small frozen lake by some trees. At the far end was a quaint little cabin, sitting atop a rock outcropping. They walked around the lake into the cabin. It was abandoned, so they went in and took a break. Daniel and his wife, Misty, 37, took a nap and the kids just played on their phones and eventually fell asleep. They all snapped awake when a deafening scream was heard from the other side of the lake. They shared the same sleepy, confused glances with each other. After about 10 minutes of silence, the temperature dropped and the wind picked up. It was about this time that they realized they didn't bring any food. Daniel got up and shut the door to block the wind. They were all hungry and very cold. Austin was begging Daniel to let him go out to try and get back home. Daniel wasn't going to let just one of them go. It was all or none. They agreed that they were going to snuggle on the floor and try to get some sleep. When they woke up in the morning, the weather had calmed down and it started to snow again. More notably, Austin was nowhere in sight, and there was no footprints coming or leaving the cabin. Then they started looking around in the woods. They all walked together, and after walking for a little bit, they found little specks of blood in the snow. When they looked around, the blood didn't trail anywhere. When they looked up, a headless elk was flayed about the tops of 3 trees, pieces thrown all around. Upon seeing this, Bethany fainted and Misty started to cry. Daniel was just trying to figure out what could have done this. Just when Misty gathered herself and Bethany woke up, they started their walk back to the mansion on the lake, hoping they would find Austin on the way. As they walked, they approached a small hill, and when they crested the hill, there was a quaint little cabin sitting at the edge of a small lake. They walked the same path 4 times and still ended up at the same spot every time they crested the small hill. They finally decided just to settle down and sleep in the cabin since night was beginning to fall. Right as night fell, the temperature dropped and the wind picked up. Just as Daniel was about to fall asleep, he heard a knocking at the door and Austin's voice yelling to let him in.
Dad, let me in, Dad. It's cold.
Daniel jumped up and swung the door open, and there stood Austin, pale as a ghost with deep dark black eyes. Austin came in and snuggled up next to his mom and sister, but something just felt off about Austin to Daniel. He didn't have the same posture, and his mannerisms seemed off. Just enough to worry Daniel. He just chalked it up to Austin having a long day and dozed off to sleep. When Daniel woke, Austin was sitting in the corner just staring at Daniel. Daniel asked him what he was doing and got no response from Austin. He was just sitting there with a senseless stare.
After about 5 minutes, Misty and Bethany woke up and Austin started to act less weird. The next day was too windy to consider leaving, so they stayed indoors and tried to conserve heat. But it had been 3 days since they had last eaten, and they were starting to get extremely hungry. When the sun was falling over the horizon, Austin jumped up and took off running over to the now frozen lake. As he ran, his family was screaming for him to come back and that it was too cold. While he was running, he seemed to grow in height and his arms became freakishly long, while huge antlers proceeded to protrude from his head. His form was getting broken up by some snow being carried by the wind. Daniel decided he was going to chase after Austin and try to help him. The farther he got from the cabin, the colder he got and felt exponentially more hungry. Just about the time when he had stopped to catch a breath, he heard an ungodly loud guttural scream. The scream got louder and louder as thunderous footsteps were starting to come into earshot. Daniel laid down on the snow, trying his best to hide from whatever was after him. The scream stopped, and all he could hear was footsteps and labored breathing. He popped his head above the snow, and what he saw was traumatizing. What stood 20 feet from him was a 12-foot-tall human figure with arms that dangled to the snow with huge claws on each finger. Atop his neck sat an elk's skull, and there was a stringy substance hung off of it everywhere. He must have gawked for too long because he gained the creature's attention. The last thing Daniel saw was a huge mouth equipped with long fangs and bloody strings hanging over them. Misty sat in horror as they heard immensely loud shrieking, followed by blood-curdling screams of her husband being eaten. As Misty and Bethany had begun to accept their fate, they found a lighter on the floor in the corner. With this new addition to their arsenal, they could finally help this blistering cold they had been feeling. They started a small fire using floorboards in the fireplace. Just as they were warming up, they began to hear knocking on the door. Neither one of them had the courage to open the door and allow whatever was out there to end them. The knocking wouldn't stop. It went from the front door to the windows and just everywhere. It seemed to encapsulate them. They could not sleep. The knocking would not stop. Then, it stopped suddenly. Just as fast as it came, it left. Then the voices came. The voices of Austin and Daniel pleading to let them in. Misty and Bethany both knew whatever was mimicking their ill-fated family wasn't something they wanted to let in. They roughed it through the night. Not one of them got a blink of sleep. With the morning came the sun, something they hadn't seen in days, it seemed. The weather was considerably nicer than the day before, and they were making a plan to get out of there. They stepped onto the porch, and there was a beaten path through at least 5 feet of snow all the way around their cabin. They ran, and they didn't look back. Bethany was younger than her mother, and had more stamina, therefore she was leading the way. They made it past the barrier hill, and Bethany stopped to look back for her mom, and she was gone. There was no trace. So Bethany ran and ran, and as she ran, she felt an overwhelming feeling of grief about leaving her mom behind. As she came within sight of her dad's mansion, she turned around and ran back to find her mom. She got back to the hill, and her mom was crawling over the top, so Bethany ran up to help her. Her mom's lower half had been ripped completely off, but her legs were so badly frostbitten, it wasn't too big of a deal. Bethany went and held her mom in her last few moments. As Misty died, she muttered some incoherent phrase, and Bethany suddenly felt at peace. She headed back to her dad's mansion and warmed up and got some food. She figured it would be a good idea to go shower, and when she walked past the mirror, she saw something unexpected. A small set of antlers protruding from her hair.
This happened years ago, back when I was 17. It still gives me the chills every time I think about this. I was a student in school and had a few friends that I trusted the most. Tom, Lewis, Bill, Angela, and Sarah. We had all been friends since grade 1 of our school, so you could say I trusted them the most even out of family. At this time, it was the start of summer break, and so Tom decided to plan a trip to going overnight in a cabin. It took a while of planning and convincing us, but in the end, we all decided that we would all be going. The day we drove all the way over to that forest, Bill parked the car next to the old and dusty cabin. It was made out of wood and it looked very old. There was also a large and crystal clear lake next to the cabin. It was eerie and unsettling to say the least. "All right, everyone, get out of the car," Bill said. We all got out of the car and made our way over to the shack. The floorboards of the front porch were creaking and loose. I had a slight regret in myself for coming on this trip, but I told myself it would be fine. Angela pushed open the door as it made a loud creaking noise. The cabin was dark and empty. "This is nothing like the pictures in the website," Tom said, furious. "Guys, this is really cool. This place seems almost haunted. It's so cool," Sarah said happily. Sarah was into creepy things, so seeing this house made her feel extremely happy. "It'll be fine. We're only here for like one night, so it should be fine," Lewis said. As we walked around the cabin, I noticed something that made me a bit confused. All of the cabin windows were around 7 feet tall, to the point where not one of us could see through them. "Guys, these windows seem very high," Sarah pointed out. "That's because back in the day, people were hunted down by others, so they made their windows higher so no one could see them," Bill said. Every single room had these windows very high up, but I shrugged it off. It was around 8 p.m. at night, and we had all already finished arranging all of our stuff, and so we decided to make a barbecue and get some food cooking. Bill arranged the barbecue items all in the front yard, and he started cooking up some hot dogs and chicken. "So, Jim, how's the trip so far?" Tom said to me as he sipped on water.
Pretty good," I replied. "This is definitely not the house that we were going to get, but don't worry," Tom said.
"Yeah. Hey, Tom."
"Yeah?
Can I ask you something?"
"Sure, Jim."
"Who used to live in this house?" There was a long and awkward pause.
"Some woman named Bashek or something, I don't know."
"Who is Bashek?" I said.
"Like I know, I don't really know."
"Guys, food's ready,"
Bill yelled.
"Oh, I'm gonna go eat," Tom said.
"Yeah, me too. I'm super hungry."
I was really hungry since I hadn't eaten since we drove to the cabin. I ate some hot dogs and chicken, but I had the urge to pee. I excused myself out and went over to the cabin, but I forgot the key. I was too lazy to go back and ask them for the key, so I went out over to the lake to pee. While I was doing my business, something caught my eye that was on the lake. It looked like a log or a bird. I couldn't tell what it was, so I moved closer and my heart skipped a beat. It was a woman's severed, bloody head floating in the lake. Her hair was wrinkled and fuzzy and her eyes were hollowed. My eyes widened as I kept staring at the head. It was floating towards me slowly. I blinked for a split second and it was gone. Weird. It must just be the alcohol I drank making me this way, I thought. I shrugged it off and went back to the barbecue to eat. After we had all eaten, we came back inside the house and played some fun board games, like Uno, Monopoly, etc. 2 hours had passed, and it was now 12 a.m.
"All right, guys, let's get some sleep," Tom said.
We all agreed and went to our own rooms. My room was the smallest and most compact. It was on the second floor. Me and Bill had to share one room. We slept on a bunk bed, and I slept on the top.
I walked into the room with Bill, switched off the light, jumped in the bed, closed my eyes, and dozed off. I was awoken by the sound of loud thumping outside the window. It was heavy, and it shook the cabin. I shrugged it off, as I was still sleepy, and so I turned around and tried to get some shut-eye. A few minutes later, I heard the cracking of leaves outside the window. I stood up from my bed and tried to see what was out there, but I couldn't because the window was too high up. I laid back down, but was broken up by the same footsteps, but this time, they were much louder and closer to the room. I jolted up, and what I saw made my heart sink. I looked at the window and saw a large head of an old woman. She had a grin that spread from cheek to cheek. It was heavily disturbing. The woman's skin was pale and wrinkled and looked as if it was decomposing. Her eyes had no pupil, as if it was just white. Her teeth were jagged and razor-sharp looking. I saw her hair moving and swaying by the blowing of the wind. What the most disturbing thing was, this woman's head was as large as the window. The windows were larger than my whole body, and that's an understatement. I was frozen in fear. Me and the woman locked eyes with each other for what felt like hours. Her grin stayed the same the whole time. That's when the woman let out an ear-bleeding roar that shattered the window. Glass fell and jutted out everywhere. I finally could move and I screamed. Bill woke up and saw the woman. Bill didn't scream or anything. He just sprinted out of the room as fast as he could. While trying to go down the bunk bed, I fell and fractured my arm. I ignored the pain and kept running. Bill was calling everyone to leave the house, and they didn't believe us until they heard the woman let out another roar. Everyone was evacuating the cabin in a panic. We all bursted out the front door and ran. I turned around to see what looked like a 12-foot-tall woman standing there in front of the window. Her body was bony and thin, and she wore run-down clothing. As I was looking at her, I saw countless dead bodies lying and floating in the lake. Tom tugged my arm as he carried me to the car.
"What the hell is that thing?" Bill yelled. "I don't know," Tom screamed.
Bill drove off away into the forest, and we could hear the faint roars of the woman coming from the cabin.
"That's a monster," Sarah shouted. "Jim, explain what happened."
Bill said while driving the car. I explained to them everything, and their expressions were shocked, sad, and scared. When we arrived back in the city, we told the cops about what had happened. They all drove off to the cabin to find nothing. Just the large, muddy footprints of the woman. No one believed what we saw that night. Not even the cops. To this day, I still don't know what that creature was. All I could think of is that it may have been the Bashek. I really don't know what that thing was, and I wish I could find out more information about it, but I can't. So beware of that cabin in the forest, and beware of Bashek.